This podcast may contain content that is graphic and disturbing in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
A 17-year-old high school girl met up with her teacher for a game of basketball. She then went missing, but was found 30 hours later in a remote, wooded area, lifeless. This is Apple for the Teacher, a true crime podcast. I'm your host, Anna Thomas. Today's episode is called Dead Wood. The girl was found in the woods. What happened to her? Just a note before starting. Apple for the Teacher does not name perpetrators out of respect to the victims. I'd like for you to think back to your school days. For me, I have very fond memories of school, but I know for other people it may be a time that they would rather forget. Today's story is about a 17-year-old schoolgirl named Ashley Reeves, who lived with her family in the state of Illinois in the US. She was described as an excellent student who was highly motivated and had plans to go to university. She had many friends, and her parents described her as a joy to have as a daughter. She also had a boyfriend named Jeremy, and they had been going together for about 2 years. Her parents approved of their relationship, having only good things to say about him. It was a day in 2006 when Ashley left her home to attend a job interview. She told her parents she would go and play basketball after the interview, so she took a change of clothes with her. Ashley headed off to a town about 15 minutes away from where she lived. She had borrowed her boyfriend's car to drive to the interview. But as night descended on that day, Ashley still hadn't returned home. She had a 10 p.m. curfew, which she always honoured, and if she was going to be late, she would always let her parents know. They thought her lateness was very unlike Ashley. And when they tried to text her, they got no answer. So they then contacted some of her friends, but no one had seen or heard from her. Her friends also tried to text her, but with no luck. By late that night, her parents were worried sick and decided to call the police. The police lieutenant who was on duty that night remembers how he felt after receiving their call. Quote, "Unfortunately, we get a few calls that are like that, and the vast majority of them are either maybe they have stayed out too long with a friend or something like that. But there was something very different about this case. This missing girl, Ashley Reeves, was not answering even texts from any of her friends. And the one thing we know with young ladies is they will maybe not answer their parents, but they will answer their friends." And there was something with the mother's voice that really sounded very stressful. And I said, "Captain, this one sounds a little bit different. I think we probably need to run with this one right away." And it wasn't very long into the police search that evening that her boyfriend's car was found at a park. But Ashley was nowhere to be seen. There were basketball courts nearby, so it seems that's where she had planned to play, but they didn't know with who. Although Ashley wasn't there, her interview clothes and basketball clothes were still in the car. As she had been driving her boyfriend's car, he became the first line of inquiry for the police. The police brought Jeremy in for questioning. And here is part of the recorded interview.
If you could, when was the last time that you saw Ashley?
It was out at the bar, out in Paderborn. It was between 8 and 10, somewhere around there. And we swapped vehicles because she wanted to take my truck because she had an interview and I wanted to do an oil change on her car.
Okay, and what night was that?
It was on Wednesday night. It was her dad's birthday.
Okay. And was everybody up there at the, like, all her family up there at the bar or just
It wasn't, like, the whole family, but it was, oh, yeah, her immediate family, yeah, was yeah. up there. Her dad, yeah, everybody was up there.
Okay. And when you left Wednesday night, did she leave with her mom and dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
She drove my truck home, but yeah.
She drove your truck home.
Yeah.
And when was the last time that you talked to her?
It was yesterday between, it was around noonish, about between like 11 and 1. And she just said, I called her, left a voicemail earlier that morning. She called me on lunch to see what I wanted. And I asked if she could bring my truck back. And she said, no, because I'm going to go to this interview and I'm going to go play basketball out in since I'm going to be in Belleville anyway. So I'm going to go play basketball out there.
Okay.
I said, okay.
Did she say who she was going to play basketball with?
No.
Okay. But she did, is that normal for her to go and play basketball whenever she's up in Belleville? Or?
She's really not out there much. It's just whenever she gets together to play basketball. And since she was already out there for the interview, she said she's going to go play basketball. So.
Okay. And where was she supposed to have the interview at?
Supermarket of Shoes over, I'm not sure, I think it's Carlisle Avenue over in front of Walmart.
And you'd said earlier on that you guys had stopped by there and picked up an application at one time.
Yeah, it was, it was 2 or 3 months ago, maybe longer. It was a while back. We picked up an application, but took it back up there for her, so.
Were you going to meet with her last night at all? Or anything?
The only thing she told me was that I should try and call her, you know, if I got a chance, because like I said, I was with my uncle's band out at Stratford Bar and Grill, and she said if I get a chance, call her.
Okay.
Other than that, I mean, I wish I would have called her now.
Yeah. What's your uncle's bands? What do they
Merrimack Bottom. They had, David Allen Coe had a show there last night, and they opened up for him, so.
What time did you go over there for that?
I left work about 4 and left my grandma's about 5, 4:15, and I got there probably around 5:30 or so.
Okay, over at the bar?
Yeah. And I drove there, and my uncle picked up her van, and my aunt took his car back, and so I drove separate because they're going to stay up there, and I wasn't originally going to, but I did anyways.
Wound up staying where?
At Stratford, but it's a hotel and a bar and type restaurant type thing. So I stayed up there with them and drove back this morning.
Okay. Were you supposed to be at work this morning? Or
yeah, at 9 o'clock. And then when I got to work, Ashley's dad had called Dobbs and asked him for me to call them. And when I did, that's when I found out. Yeah.
Okay. This morning, whenever Ashley's dad called you, when you talked to him, what did he tell you?
He just said that Ashley's missing and he broke down and, you know, he just... Normally what a father would do, you know, when he's missing a daughter, he just said that she was missing and asked if she was with me because they thought that she might have been with me because that was the last, you know, resort, and then she wasn't, so.
Do you know anybody that she would be with at this point in time? Or?
I can't think of anybody.
Okay.
I mean, I really can't see her doing this.
Is Ashley suffering from any kind of, you know, depression, mental illness, anything like that? Did you know of if you're taking any kind of medication for anything like that? Has there been anything in the past that, has she been through any kind of trouble or trying times recently or anything like that?
Not recently. A while back, we had an abortion, though. And
how long was that?
Probably December.
Okay.
It was a little bit before December.
How did she take that?
She was all right. I mean, it wasn't like horrible, like a bout of depression or anything, you know. She's fine, and she's a lot better now. I mean, we're both a lot better from, you know, we got over it. I mean, it's still the thought, we know what we did, and it's still there, but.
Does she have any problem with drugs or alcohol?
No.
No drugs at all or anything?
No.
Like that?
The only time she ever drinks is when we go camping, and that's never, I've never seen her outside of camping drink.
What about drugs, marijuana, anything like that?
No.
So after hearing what her boyfriend had to say, what are your thoughts? Do you think he was telling the truth? Do you think he had anything to do with Ashley's disappearance? The answer to these questions will become clear a little later. In this next part of the interview, you will hear Jeremy talk about a man that he and Ashley both knew. He had been a former teacher of hers. The police already knew about this man, as they were given information about him when interviewing Ashley's friends. He was a 27-year-old physical education teacher. He had been Ashley's teacher when she was in the 7th grade in 2001. He went on to teach at other schools, but he and Ashley reconnected only a few months before she went missing. He was described as a very popular teacher that was well-liked by the students and community. He was very athletic and played multiple sports. He was also known to be an aspiring professional wrestler who had called himself the teacher, which to my mind is not very creative, but nevertheless. So in this next part of the audio, they discuss this man.
And Sam, the teacher that is a friend of yours, I believe, from Otter Freeburg, what's their relationship like? What's that?
The last time I was with them, where we were all together, it was me, Sam, my buddy Brandon, and Ashley. We were at Mardi Gras. Just a friend. Mm-hmm. I trust them, so I really don't know, you know, when they play basketball. It doesn't faze me because, you know, I don't expect them to do anything. So.
Do they play basketball together?
They played a couple times that I know of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever play basketball with them, or no. Is it just mainly them?
It's just mainly them.
Okay. Do they talk quite a bit with each other, or...?
Yeah, they talk a lot.
Like how often?
I really couldn't tell you because a couple times he calls whenever, you know, I'm around, and which, like I said, I don't mind. Mm-hmm. But I would say when I'm around, she's probably talking to him maybe two or three times a week because a lot of times she does kind of walk off, but I don't question her because, you know, it's none of my business. It's, you know, her life, so...
Do you suspect anything between Sam and Ashley?
No. I couldn't see it. I mean, I trust them both too much. I mean, I trust her so much more than him, you know, because it's my girlfriend. I don't think he would ever do anything to harm her, you know. It's just, it doesn't seem like it's his nature.
Well, what about if, you know, possibly not even harming, but what about if they were to... You know, if they were an item or something like that, would you suspect that at all?
No.
How long have you known Sam?
I was probably sophomore in high school, I want to say, when I met him, and I met him through my buddy, and he was teaching out in St. Louis. So, about 5-6 years, maybe.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So he's when you met him, he was a teacher.
I'm pretty sure he was a teacher over in St. Louis. I think he was doing something with kids. And then he was also doing wrestling stuff, and he plays a lot of sports. So.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
What's he like? What's he?
He's just your all-around average, you know, guy. I mean, loves the party and, you know, loves to teach. That's like his main goal. But he's just average. I mean, there's nothing special or unique about him. Just easygoing guy.
And does he have a girlfriend or a wife or anything like that?
Not that I know of.
Was he ever married that you know of?
No, not that I know of. He wasn't married, no.
And you didn't see her or talk to her last night at all?
No, not at all.
Okay. And you didn't harm her in any way or?
No, I would never. No.
Okay. Have you ever been physical with her in the past before?
No, never. I couldn't do it. There's no way.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know where she's at this time?
No.
Okay. Do you suspect Sam in any of this?
I really couldn't see him doing it.
And if it came down to it, if we needed to, we have a polygraph examiner here on the department. Mm-hmm. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Would you be willing to take one of those?
Yeah. Anything that helps with anything.
Okay.
Anything.
So Ashley's friends, and now her boyfriend, corroborated that Ashley would meet up with the teacher to play basketball, as he was a sports coach, so it seemed to make sense. However, the police could not help wondering whether the two of them were meeting up for more than just basketball. The police then looked into her boyfriend's alibi, that he had been out of town that night, and they were able to confirm everything that he had said during the interview. He was then excluded as a suspect, and their attention then focused solely on Ashley's ex-teacher. While the police were making their inquiries and interviewing Ashley's boyfriend, her parents were doing their own investigating. They looked at Ashley's phone bill and discovered a number that appeared over and over again, so they decided to call the number. The person on the other end turned out to be the teacher that Ashley had supposedly been meeting up with for basketball. He stated that he hadn't seen or heard from her and told Ashley's mother that she probably had nothing to worry about. He said that if he heard from her, he would be sure to let her know. It was then that the police stumbled upon a piece of information which confirmed their suspicions about Ashley and the teacher. One of Ashley's friends stated that Ashley had confided in her that she and the teacher were in a romantic relationship. The teacher was then brought in for questioning. He confirmed being her teacher years earlier and that they had just recently ran into each other again and had played basketball a few times. When police asked about his whereabouts during the time frame that Ashley went missing, he explained that he'd had a typical day, teaching school and then went out that night for line dancing. He told investigators that he hadn't seen or heard from Ashley in days and that he had no idea of her whereabouts. But he was then quizzed more about their relationship, given she was a student and he was a teacher. But he stated that his relationship with Ashley was purely platonic. However, the conversation took a different tone when he was confronted with Ashley's phone records and was told that Ashley's friend had told police they were involved in a romantic relationship. He then said that it was Ashley who was obsessed with him and that she would call him non-stop. The detectives now knew they were onto something, and in the coming hours continued to press him, and sure enough, his story began to change. He finally admitted that they had been in a relationship, but that he had wanted to call it off. He recalled the first time they had got together as follows, quote, "Yes, we did have sex once in the back of my car, and after that day, I felt absolutely terrible about that." And as the questioning continued, he provided another bombshell, saying that on the day Ashley had gone missing, he had met up with her with the intention of breaking things off. He drove to the park where Ashley was waiting in her boyfriend's car, as they had arranged. She then got into his car and they drove off together. However, he described how she didn't respond well after being told that he wanted to end their relationship. They then began arguing and she got increasingly upset. He stated, quote, "She was screaming, kicking, everything. She got out of the car. I shut the door. I took off. I left her. I left her there is what I did. I left her right out there." When asked whether he was concerned about her safety and about why he didn't go back to check on her, this was his response, quote, "I did not want to drive by there because if I would have drove by there, if I would have seen her, like, I don't know, if she got hit by a car or something and she was laying there in a ditch, if I would have seen that, I could not stand that. I have an absolute fear. I have a very weak stomach when it comes to, like, gore movies, and I can't even watch those. I still have in my mind from that movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that came out. Have you seen that movie? If I would, like, see her lying on the side of the road right there, it just, I don't know, I would have just felt absolutely horrible." As the questioning continued, another detective came in to talk to the man, and as it turned out, they both knew one another. When the teacher had been a Boy Scout, he had been involved in a police program teaching kids about law enforcement, and the detective had been one of the officers involved. It had now been more than 10 hours since the questioning had started, and when the detective mentioned the man's grandmother, who he lived with, there came a turning point in the investigation into what happened to Ashley Reeves. Here is that audio.
"If I left from here and I went and talked to Grandma right now and I laid down this whole story that you're saying, what's Grandma going to say?
I just want to go home. I just want to explain to Mom and Grandma exactly what happened."
"Grandma's not here."
"I know."
"Your mom's not here."
"Oh."
"But you know what? In a way, they are. Because everything they taught you, all the talks Grandma had with you, are within you. All of them are. And unfortunately, right now, Sam, you ain't telling us the truth. And you need to. You have to. For Mom. For Grandma."
The detective's words seemed to elicit a reaction from the man, and he was then asked to be left alone. When the detectives returned, he seemed visibly upset, and they listened intently as the man proceeded to confess to the murder of Ashley Reeves. He described how Ashley got hysterical during their argument and that he yelled at her to get out of his car. When she refused and continued to scream at him, he got out of the car and tried to pull her out from the passenger side door. She continued to be upset and resisted being pulled out of the car. He said he then put her in a chokehold to calm her down. But while doing so, he said he heard a loud pop and that Ashley then went limp and he thought he had accidentally broken her neck. He then dragged her into the woods and after realizing she was still breathing, he got his belt and wrapped it around her neck and then used his foot for leverage until he heard gurgling noises and then let go. He then saw foam coming out of her mouth. Her skin turned a sickly colour and her tongue was protruding between her teeth. But he continued to pull the belt until it eventually broke. He then went back to using his hands to choke her until there was no more breathing or foaming at the mouth. Believing she was dead, he said the following, "I just took off. I mean, literally darted through there like a bat out of hell." Following this confession, he agreed to take them to where he left Ashley, but it wasn't going to be easy to find her. It was now dark and also raining, and the wooded area was very thick. After 30 minutes, the police began to feel that he was just taking them on a wild goose chase and had no intention of leading them to her. This search for Ashley in the woods had been recorded, and the video can be seen on YouTube. You can see the police trying to make their way through the dense bush with flashlights, but as time passes, the teacher keeps making excuses for not leading them to Ashley, using the rain and the dark as the reason why he couldn't find where he had left her. But eventually their efforts pay off, and they find Ashley after being missing for 30 hours. She was laying on her back and covered in insect bites and scratches, and her neck appeared to be broken. The following audio captures the moment she was found.
Okay, came in there.
It's been 30 hours, and he can't remember where he left her.
Oh, yeah. I came in the woods, and I just started moving.
Finally.
Oh, hey, right there.
They make a grim discovery. The remains of Ashley Reeves.
Pretend if I could get some light.
But this victim has a story of her own.
She's breathing. She's breathing. Get EMTs. Get EMTs. I can see your eyes moving with the light, Ashley. Can you say anything?
Her neck is broken, but she's alive.
Ashley, can you hear me?
And will soon be safe, thanks to the skill of the interrogator.
Secure him, okay?
Keep breathing. Keep breathing. Keep breathing.
They were under no illusion that she was in a very bad state. When the paramedics finally arrived, they concluded that she most likely wouldn't make it. The teacher was then taken back to the police station, and the following conversation occurred between him and the detective. Quote, "Am I going to be able to get, like, my contact solution and take my contacts out and toothbrush? I don't think so. I can't take my contacts out?" He then makes this request about going to the toilet. "Can I get, like, a little private toilet? Because I can't pee when there's people around because of my urinary stress disorder." And the policeman responds, "I don't know. I'll tell them that that's what you want, but I don't know if they'll be able to do that." He replies, "Because I'll be miserable if I can't pee." Meanwhile, back at the hospital, the doctors didn't give Ashley much chance of survival. She had suffered traumatic brain injuries and had lost her ability to talk and walk. Despite not being able to communicate, she would have times when she would suddenly start screaming for no apparent reason. Her mother described it as follows, quote, "It was like she was locked into being strangled, like that's where her mind was. She would look through you and not at you. There was no recognition at all. But against all odds, Ashley slowly improved and even began communicating by blinking her eyes. They taught her to blink twice for yes and once for no. Her courage and strength eventually allowed her to relearn how to eat, speak, and use her limbs. And quite remarkably, she was well enough to leave hospital after 3 months, but continued receiving speech, occupational, and physical therapy. During this time, she didn't return to school but had a tutor and aimed to eventually achieve her goal of graduating high school. During this period of Ashley's recovery, the police continued their investigation into the events of that fateful day. It was determined that the teacher lived with his mother and grandmother near the park where he and Ashley would meet up for basketball, the spot where Jeremy's car was found abandoned. So it appeared that he made sure to go to that particular park to meet with her, rather than other parks they could have gone to nearer to her own home, no doubt so that they wouldn't be seen together. In his statement, he claimed that on the day in question, he had intended to meet with Ashley in order to break off their relationship, which he admitted had been sexual. But when Ashley was well enough to recall the events of that day, she stated that she did remember meeting the teacher, but that she was the one who wanted to break off the relationship. And that's when they got into the argument. However, her brain injury meant that she couldn't actually remember the attack or being left for dead in the woods. So we can see here that they both speak about their so-called relationship. So I wanted to find out exactly what type of relationship they had. According to her friends, she had told them it was romantic. So I looked further and found the following audio, which I think paints a very clear picture. Listen to Ashley speak here.
Did you find it odd when he was text messaging you all the time? You said he kind of wanted to know where you were all the time.
At the time, I didn't, but now that I think about it, and at the time, I didn't think it was weird. But now I look at it and it's like, should have caught on, but it didn't. I don't know if that's what he wanted. I mean, because I was in a serious relationship at the time. I guess kind of in time we grew closer because we did hang out and play basketball so much. He wanted to keep it very secret that we were spending time together and playing basketball together. If the principal found out or one of the other teachers found out, then he would lose his job.
Would you describe him as being obsessive at that point?
He definitely liked to get his way. If he was told no, he didn't like it at all.
Do you think there could have been some misunderstanding with Sam about the nature of the relationship and perhaps where it was ultimately going to go?
There could have been, but like I said, he didn't like to be told no. If he didn't get his way, then he threw a fit. And maybe that's what caused it all, because who's to say why he did what he did. But there was been thoughts thrown around that maybe he wants something more, and I said no.
You said he always wanted his way, and if he didn't get it, he'd throw a fit. Was he ever aggressive with you, no, either verbally or physically?
No, not to me personally, but I've seen, like, when he was around his friends, if he wanted to do something and they had other ideas, he would just walk away, say, fine, I'll go by myself.
Did it make you nervous he was so secretive about the time you spent together?
I wouldn't say nervous, but it definitely made me think. Like, because I went to his house only a couple of times, and he would run in, run out. And one time I waited in the living room for him to get something. And said, I'll be right back. And he ran upstairs, but nobody was ever allowed in his room. I talked to his guy friends, and he said nobody had ever been in his room. So I kind of thought, why is that such a big deal, you know? I kind of wondered what was in his room that he was hiding from everybody.
That must have been kind of creepy.
It was. Like, after I thought about it a little bit, I was like, that could be... I don't even know if I want to know what's in there, you know?
You had a crush on him.
Yeah, more or less. And I'm sure all those other girls did, too. So that's why I kind of questioned, why me? And there was all those other girls.
So when people would come up to you after you're being basically left for dead and they say, we couldn't believe this guy could do this to you, how do you react inside?
I'm kind of, like, I'm still stunned that people just walk up. People I have never seen, and they just walk up and say stuff. It's just like, yeah, well, it's over. It's in the past. I really don't want to think about it. I'm trying to reroute the subject. Because there's nothing really I can say.
To me, this audio clearly shows she was a very naive girl. Her ex-teacher is texting her. They meet for basketball. She even goes to his house a few times. He was clearly grooming her, but she just saw it as totally innocent. Even after recovering from the attack and with time to think about what had happened, she still says she wasn't sure what his intentions were. Now, there is no crime in being naive, but he clearly targeted her as he knew how easily he was able to manipulate her. The fact that he was a teacher and her own ex-teacher made her totally trust him, and I think her boyfriend was also blinded by the fact that he was a teacher. So it's hard to know what the truth is. She never confirms that they were romantic with each other, but it doesn't matter anyway. Not that it would make any difference, because he had no right to do what he did. So while Ashley was recovering, the teacher's case progressed through the courts, and he was ultimately charged with attempted murder but pleaded not guilty. And quite surprisingly to many, he was granted bail of $800,000 and was put under house arrest and required to wear an electronic tracker. While awaiting his trial, the man attempted to commit suicide at home by ingesting prescription pills and alcohol. While being treated by EMTs, he spat and punched at them and had to be tasered. It was also noted that he had some writing on his chest, which read, "Don't resuscitate me." He eventually fully recovered, but the prosecution believed he had only wanted to gain sympathy and hadn't really intended to take his life. After undergoing a psychological assessment, the prosecution and defence accepted the findings that he was mentally fit to stand trial, but he subsequently took a plea deal and pleaded guilty to attempted first-degree murder. This meant a trial was avoided. He was ultimately sentenced to 20 years in prison. Now, let's look at how the teacher's parents reacted after their son was sentenced. They were reported to have said that their son would never have received a fair trial because the media had demonized him, and this is why they agreed to a plea deal. His mother stated, quote, "Sam's family and friends know the incident with Miss Reeves was an accident, but we reluctantly support Sam's decision to plead guilty. I realize that he hurt her, he thought she was dead, and he tried to cover that up. But we contend that his actions did not constitute attempted murder." Are you joking, lady? Now, at no point during the entire incident did the man apologize for what he did to Ashley. Even at the sentencing, when he had the opportunity to do so, he declined to make a statement. When asked whether she was disappointed that her son did not apologize, his mother stated, quote, "Not in this case, no." So they believed his story that he had accidentally broken her neck when he pulled her out of the car. Wow, with the parents like that, it's no wonder the way he turned out. Following her ordeal, Ashley stayed out of the public spotlight. In the following audio, which was recorded only in recent years, she talks about what it was like watching the video of her attacker's interrogation. And then she goes back to the place where she was found in the woods.
I'm sure you've seen some of the interrogations that went on to Sam. How was that for you?
I didn't watch them at all until just recently. I made it about a minute and 30 seconds in, and then I was just so upset by it that I just had to turn it off.
Trust me more than anybody right now. I want to know where she is too.
I was just so upset by it, by his lies and things I knew that weren't true. And then him just justifying that what he did was okay. And just showing no kind of remorse whatsoever. I just couldn't do it. I just had to turn it off.
I don't blame you one bit. And then I've never been in this situation, so I can't imagine how you would feel, but have you seen the video that they took when they found you?
I did. I watched it up until the point where they actually found me.
Yeah. Oh, hey, right there.
I just felt like I wanted to see. I wanted to know where I, you know, where I started. It kind of just gave me a sense of strength and kind of how far I've come, because I think I fought that for a long time of always being down on myself, of like, you know, frowning upon what I still can't do versus what, how far I've come and what I can do. But I made it up until the point on the video where they found me, and just the position I was laying and where I was, and it was just extremely upsetting to me and just kind of heartbreaking, because I always saw the same as my friend, and to tell, have everybody tell me what happened and what he did, and then to see it was just kind of almost, you know, overwhelming. It was too much to take in.
Now, on a cold winter day, Ashley takes Elizabeth back to the scene of the crime.
Have you ever come back to see the spot where you were found?
Nope, not until now.
A scene that today looks peaceful, but was once the stuff of nightmares.
Make me a little nervous, a little anxious.
Today, Ashley has a new life. Two kids, a job, and a busy school schedule, and even an extended family that was formed the night she disappeared. The team of detectives who wouldn't let a madman get away with murder.
You're okay?
Oh, yeah. It's going better than I thought it would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this actually where guys went in?
The woods goes back pretty far, right. And it was dark then, so it took a long time to find you.
End of the day, it was not just another day at the office.
Now, this was the investigation of a lifetime. This is the one where at the end of the investigation, you find the girl in peril tied to the railroad tracks, and you save her in the nick of time.
The video of when she was found can easily be found on YouTube, and it's just so unbelievable. When you see how she looked and the position of her neck, which was clearly broken, it's understandable that the paramedics didn't think that she would survive. And I don't usually go into graphic detail about how a perpetrator murdered someone, but this time I did describe what he did because it makes her survival that much more miraculous. And also because of the fact that he was a physically fit person, a sports teacher, even a wrestler. For all these reasons, she really should have died. And when you think about it, she had a number of crucial things happen that went in her favour. She was found after 30 hours. Any longer, and one would imagine that she would have died. And it was that detective who knew the teacher who managed to hit the spot when talking about his grandmother. So the fact that they knew one another was absolutely crucial. Otherwise, he may not have confessed. Now, I'm wondering what you thought about Ashley's boyfriend and the fact that he knew Ashley and the teacher were meeting up and that he apparently didn't have a problem with it. I found this really curious. Was he just a very chill boyfriend who wasn't the very jealous or controlling type, which is a great thing? But to me, I can't really believe that their meetings didn't raise eyebrows. I don't know if I'm being too harsh, but perhaps Ashley's attack wouldn't have happened if he had questioned what they were doing. Perhaps in that situation, he did need to be nosy and critical of their relationship. I don't want to sound like I'm blaming the victim, or in this case, her boyfriend, but to me, it should have raised some red flags. So what do you think? Now, remember earlier when the teacher mentioned that he had gone out line dancing on the night after Ashley disappeared? Well, as it turned out, the police had been able to confirm this as they requested surveillance footage from the bar that he had gone to. And sure enough, there was the video footage showing the man dancing. So it really looks like to me that he had gone dancing to give himself an alibi. So what happened to Ashley after that? Her ordeal happened back in 2006, but only a year later, this amazing girl had managed to achieve her goal and graduated high school. So the attack had ultimately made no impact to her education. She went on to marry and have two children, and then it was 2 years ago in 2021 that her story was made into a movie called Left for Dead. But sadly, I have to end this episode on a rather ominous note. The teacher was given a 20-year sentence with a non-parole period of 18 years. This makes him eligible for parole next year in 2024. We can only imagine what must be going through Ashley's mind. She has finally settled into a normal life, but now has to confront the horror that this man will be free very soon. But now let's finish with some final words from Ashley herself.
Do you feel it's important to share your story?
I feel it is important. People who think that they are just give up, it's not, don't give up. Don't ever give up on yourself. There's bigger, better things out there. I've gone through plenty of hardships, and it's just keep fighting. Every day it's a struggle, but you just gotta keep on charging.
What an absolutely amazing story of survival. So if you'd like to find out more of her or find photos of her or the footage of when she was found, her name is Ashley Reeves. So that's the end of today's episode. Thank you for listening. Bye for now, and remember to be a good apple.